Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Trend Wrap. Today, joined by Herman Pretorius, the author of Rule Breakers. And you can check out last week's episode on Thursday to get some more details about that book. But let's get into the news of today. And the big story that has been breaking today and yesterday has been accusations about the Minister of Police. KwaZulu-Natal Police Commissioner Lieutenant General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi has alleged that senior figures in the government, including Police Minister Senzo Mchunu, have undermined investigations into political killings and organized crime. The police commissioner on Sunday claimed the disbandment of the political killings task team was orchestrated to shield politically connected members of a criminal syndicate from prosecution with the assistance of the police minister. Mkhwanazi said, quote, "I can confirm before South Africans today that the investigations which these members were involved with in Gauteng has unmasked the syndicate, and this syndicate involves, amongst others, politicians who are currently serving in parliament. Some syndicate members are in the South African Police Service, the Metro Police and Correctional Services. They include prosecutors in the Gauteng province, the judiciary, and all of these are controlled by the drug cartel and business people in Gauteng. This act, of course, undermines the criminal justice system in the country. The political killings task team, which was set up after a 2018 assassination of an ANC activist, was shut down by the minister on the very suspicious date of the 31st of December, 2024. If you want to hide a news story, that's normally when you would do it, on New Year's Eve. The minister said at the time that the task team was no longer necessary because it did not add value to policing in the province. There are some WhatsApp messages put forward by the commissioner which claim to show the phone of an accused businessman. I'm showing communications between the accused businessman and Minister Mchunu and a politically connected intermediary. So, Herman, I think this is a very important story, a very dangerous story. Obviously, if there is indeed a direct link between political assassinations and the Minister of Police, this is a big crisis. At the same time, I am skeptical of the police in KZN. I think that to see them as disentangled from the political killings and murders and chaos that goes on in that province is very unlikely. So I'm not sure who to trust here. I do not have evidence, but my gut tells me, as yours does too, I believe, that we should be a bit cautious about deciding what's going on here.
Absolutely. And I wonder whether this is perhaps both our analytical psyches trying to sort of overcompensate for just coming jumping to the conclusion that whatever happens, the ANC is to blame. Now, I don't know much about Minister Mchunu. Is actually quite a sort of an enigmatic figure, but also a slightly boring figure. He's not your run-of-the-mill politician, and he's certainly quite the opposite of Bekele, who was a showman par excellence and sort of a loudmouth and really a brash character. But from what I can pick up, Minister Mchunu is held with some regard, especially compared to his predecessor. And as you pointed out in the pre-show chat, that there seem to be some progress in terms of, you know, the South African murder rate and all those findings over the last year. So, of course, it's not conclusive evidence that Minister Mchunu is a good guy and so on. But for some reason, I find these sorts of dramatic declarations by especially non-partisan people, servants of the state, rather suspicious. I think there are ways to have yourself taken seriously and to have a firestorm set off. And sometimes you can be taken seriously and set off a firestorm. But there seems to me too much of the drama, too much of the sort of burn it all down, explosive claims, opening up a case against the minister. This feels like a drastic escalation. If you go look at really respected law enforcement or justice officials in our history and over the last few decades. You look at someone like Linus Breitenbach, you look at someone like Willy Hofmeyr, you look at someone like Vusi Pikoli, you know, respected agents of the justice system. What they tend to eschew is public attention, unless it is absolutely necessary. As a general rule, they are shy. I know some folks in the forensic investigation community. By definition, if there's almost a link between competence in fighting crime and an avoidance of the spotlight. And this is incredibly weak evidence and circumstantial evidence from my part, so I'm not basing my entire analysis on it. But there seems to be something theatrical, something quite provocative in the way that General Mkhwanazi went about this. We'll need to find out more, and hopefully we do. But if, as I said in the pre-show discussion, that if I were to think about entities and people involved in the 2027 ANC electoral contest for, secretary generalship, deputy minister, deputy president of the ANC, president of the ANC in the top seven that used to be the top six, and we know Minister Ntshunu once ran for the secretary generalship and might have ambitions to contest that position again, or he has been mentioned by some people as a possible deputy president for the ANC. If I were to launch a politically sort of factionally motivated assault on Minister Ntshunu, this is the sort of thing that I would welcome at the sort of time that I would welcome it to happen. That is, of course, I'm not saying that this is politically motivated. I'm just saying that with the sort of politico spidey senses that we try to develop in this profession and that we try to hone over time, something about this feels off. And I'm not siding with the politician against the policeman, and I'm not siding with the policeman against the politician, but something about this does not add up for me, and I can't quite explain it. And I wish I had better analysis, but at this stage, we're trying to make sense of really a one-sided affair that could be quite combustible.
And the minister, for his part, responded to a Daily Maverick reporter saying, "We have become aware of what General Mkhwanazi has been saying. I didn't have time to look at TV, but those kinds of statements that he has said, we will in good time apply our minds to those kinds of statements," which is the vaguest, most sort of, okay. Yeah, they could have just replied acknowledged, but anyway.
Yes, or just a thumbs or a blue tick would have done it, frankly.
Yeah, no, a thumbs up would have been about the same. So there's been, you know, sort of concern expressed by pretty much all the opposition parties, EFF, the DA, the smaller ones as well. And I think it's very important that this matter is cleared up. It's just like with our justice minister who had these corruption charges or allegations sort of made against her. The air needs to be cleared. Either the minister must be shown to be completely innocent, or he must be fired. You cannot have the minister of police sitting with this kind of allegation circling around him.
And something that needs to be added here, I think, to the discussion is the systemic rot that has set in, that our political class, especially in the ANC, has become so devalued, so untrustworthy, that whatever they say, you can treat it with suspicion, you'd be a rational actor. At the same time, our law enforcement system has lost so much public trust, has such a bad track record, has been politicized so suspiciously, has been subject to nothing short of political gang wars, itself compromised in terms of merit. It is so tragic that these two components of the state, over the last, you know, few years, depends on the timeline you want to draw. Usually in a situation like this, the public would have some reason to suspect one or the other. But our overall governance system, our governing class, is so bereft of merit, of public trust, that that it really is quite bizarre that we can be equally suspicious of both sides of this argument. And I would caution people to jump. I would caution them against jumping to a conclusion one side or the other.
In fact, as is so often the case, you may find that there is skullduggery on all sides. You know, just because, like, if a gangster accuses another gangster of a crime, it doesn't mean that he's innocent.
Anyway.
Bidvest has stirred some controversy by publishing the requirements for its internal school bursary program. So full-time employees of the Bidvest group, if they earn less than 15,300 rand per month before deductions, can apply for a school bursary for their kids that covers school fees, stationery from Walton, the school uniforms, and assistance with extra classes. The flyer that they put out advertising this bursary, however, added a further stipulation beyond the wealth one. Well, two other stipulations. You must be a South African citizen, but also you must be African, colored, or Indian. No whites need apply. Herman, the sort of response about this was that this was a trust set up by a BE empowerment consortium that earned 35% of the Bidvest group with the express sole purpose of uplifting historically disadvantaged individuals. And the sort of corporate spin doctor who replied to the firestorm around this sort of just waffle, waffle, we support the laws, BE good, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. What do you make of this story?
Of all the BEE and race related stuff we've covered and discussed in quite some detail and at some length over the last few months, this one just struck me as intensely sad. The kids meant to benefit from this are aged 9 to 18. These are kids who were born in like 2014, 2015.
You're old, Herman.
Yes, we are essentially decrepit, or you know, these are kids born in and well, those are the grade fours that are sort of the youngest of this class of possible beneficiaries. If this was just means tested, it could be passed off as, yes, this is a non-racial attempt to genuinely help poorer South Africans. If this was purely race-based, they could have at least gone with the assumption that, yes, you know, race is a proxy for poverty. As dubious as that connection is, at least it would have been consistent. What they've instead done is they've gone for a means-tested race-based situation, which boils down to them just finding an excuse to exclude young white kids from a program that they might benefit from. I mean, the fact that you can even be means tested, fall into the poor income bracket, that sort of would mean that if you were a different color, you'd get support. But because you're white, you don't. It just falls into the whole trap that we are facing a crisis of real transformation versus fake transformation. And this is something that people should watch out for over the next coming months as the IRR really endeavors to expose the difference between these two. Because fake transformation is tinkering with race-based targets. It's not really saying let's uplift a rising tide, lift all boats. It is let's get a rising tide and let's puncture some boats. And the boats that get punctured are purely politically determined, whether it's employment equity, whether it's BEE, or whether it's race-based schemes like this. What we're seeing is sacrificing poor South Africans, whatever their race may be, whatever their identity might be. We're seeing them being sacrificed on the altar of the ANC's race-based political preference, which I think is rather disgusting. And fake transformation. The only thing that it transforms is sort of it transforms millionaire cadres into billionaire cadres, or it transforms race relations into resentment, which is totally, totally unnecessary. Where if you want to do real transformation, all these corporates, Bidvest included, who claim that they are in favor of transformation, will within the coming months receive correspondence and engagements from the IRR to say, look, We get that you're in favor of transformation, but there's fake transformation, and then there's real transformation. Real transformation means jobs created, opportunities created, genuine upliftment. Real transformation is the type of transformational pressures that actually ended apartheid. Apartheid was ended, amongst other things, by the fact that the apartheid government effectively ran out of white labor. So businesses said to the government, for us to just operate in a basic way, you have to make sure that this racist discrimination nonsense ends. That isn't to imply that these businesses were wonderfully non-racial. But the fact is, you've got real transformation, which is visible in jobs, investment, upliftment, declining numbers of poverty, declining numbers of state dependence. And then you've got fake transformation, which is essentially the opposite of that and what we've been seeing for the last 20 years. So the tragic thing about this is it's just there's something very, very fake about it. And try explaining that to a white kid born 10 years ago, that the reason they can't get the help they need is because they look like the people who committed apartheid. I mean, it's quite sick, quite sick.
Yes, indeed. Let's move on to our last story, and so on is a bit more amusing than the previous one. President Cyril Ramaphosa has apparently been flying on an aircraft with engine defects since 2022. An audit has recently revealed technical maintenance shortcomings in the presidential jet, Kwanazi, which could have led to engine failure, potentially. The military says that the Air Force's budget for charter flights and maintenance has now been depleted, meaning that the president and other senior officials are going to have to use commercial flights. Oh no, how terrible. They'll have to fly on the same planes as us peasants. Due to, quote, limitations of the existing VIP fleet, a strategic acquisition master plan. It's never just a plan, it's always a master plan, is now being implemented to expand it with new aircraft, the military has said. We've only just gotten back our soldiers from DRC, so I guess it's the next most important thing after that. The findings apparently showed that the airworthiness directive from the original manufacturers of the engines issued in 2022 was apparently never executed. Air Force sources told City Press's sister publication report that this directive was akin to recalls issued by car manufacturers to resolve specific defects in certain models. While the audit indicated the work was signed off as completed in 2023, an inspection of the gearboxes has reportedly contradicted that claim. So Ramaphosa was flying around on a plane, which could have run into unreliable engine trouble at any time. As I think it's the movie Office Space once remarked, not great, Bob, not great.
Yes. How's that decline of merit in the public service looking now, sir? Which is really what's behind this.
Ensure just that... interrupt you. That was from Mad Men, not from Office Space. Just from Office Space.
That would have discredited the whole episode. Thank you. If you're going to move away from a system of merit-based appointments, or if you're going to deny it in the first place, moving away is perhaps the wrong wording, but if cadres are going to be appointed rather than people of merit, if contracts within the state are going to be awarded in terms of, the blatant elite being enriched rather than cost effectiveness and merit, if your whole statal system is going to decide, look, we're going to take party loyalty and racial identity, distort it to favor a very, very small politically connected few, at some point, the ability to look after a presidential aircraft is going to perhaps suffer. And of course, we are glad that the president didn't, meet a tragic accident in his plane. But I hope perhaps this creates some sleepless nights for him, that there is something like merit and there is something like appointing the right people for the job. That isn't, as many of our detractors so often mindlessly repeat, that's not the white people for the job. that's the right people for the job. Because our problem isn't that Black South Africans or colored South Africans or Indian South Africans are getting meritorious positions within the economy. The problem is that politically connected, incompetent cadres cash the check of transformation again and again and again, with most poor South Africans, of whom the vast majority are Black, being left behind to sort of at least feel happier that someone with their skin tone is now elevated to a position of importance. And if that is the basis for a staple operation, you'll get to this sort of thing where the president's life is literally in danger because the bloody aircraft he's supposed to be on might not stay in the sky.
The ANC has perfected not just their commitment to representative democracy, but representative transformation. Don't worry, guys, we'll be rich on your behalf.
Yes.
And we see the consequence all around us. And now, you know, the president is having to ride on a plane with the rest of us peasants, although, you know, obviously not in cattle class, because he is, the state institutions have been hollowed out. This shouldn't be happening. If you're going to have an expensive plane, it should freaking work.
And there's something also rather morbid about this. Not many people know this, but in 2013, I think, when Nelson Mandela was essentially dying, the military ambulance that was supposed to carry him to treatment broke down. Another military ambulance had to be gotten to get this nonagenarian hero of the Republic to a place of dignity to die. So, but that was hushed up. Perhaps I shouldn't have said that. That now, you know, if something odd happens to me, at least we now know what the cause is. But this is the level of parody we're at, is that even, you know, I think David Mabuza, didn't he die in a private hospital?
Indeed, I believe it's in
there's something quite telling when even the elites of the elites, the revered of the cadres, have to either fly on a plane that might fall or hobnob with us peasants, that might say to them, look, guys, whatever it is you think you've been doing, it isn't working.
Aye. And on that cheery note, let's call it for a close today. Thank you very much for watching. We hope you found the show interesting. We will be back tomorrow. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.